Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to Len Ward, the founder of Comexis, which specializes in helping businesses discover their return on investment. So we're talking about marketing ROI and how to report it. Thanks for downloading. Now, discovering your marketing return on investment can be difficult. There's so many different channels, so many different touch points, and some of them are offline. So how do we reliably report the return on investment? How do we report how much a sale or a lead or something has actually cost us? Now, I'm joined by Len Ward, the founder of Comexis, which is a consulting firm that helps organizations discover their true ROI. This is a fascinating chat. It really is. I know ROI can sound a little bit, you know, paint drying, but this is really fascinating. I think it'll make you think slightly differently about how you report successes and failures to the board or to your clients. Now, you can check out the Comexis website at comexis.com, which is comexis.com. And there's a link to that and Len's LinkedIn profile in the show notes. Can I quickly mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free? I'd love it if you could give the pod a quick shout on social media. Also, subscribe via your favorite podcast app. You can check out links and more podcasts at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Now, the first thing I asked Len was, measuring return on investment can be quite tricky, quite hard for marketers. Do you think we're measuring the right things?
No, we're not measuring the right things. I think the biggest deficiency when you're trying to measure return on investment in marketing, especially digital marketing, is too many business owners or CFOs are not factoring in all the cost of a customer acquisition cost. So to get a real return on investment in any type of investment that you make in this universe, you have to have some sort of number to weigh it against. And the number that they're weighing it against, it's either undefined, meaning there's not a revenue goal they're going after, or it's a number that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. In other words, you know, they may come in and say, okay, well, my return on investment is this. I got two leads. I only close, say, one case if you're a lawyer. Yeah, but the reality of the situation is you may not be looking at all your other marketing efforts that may have contributed to another case close, or you may not be looking at all the costs to even acquire just those two cases. Maybe you're just singling out the digital marketing when that may only be, say, 20% of the cost for you to actually acquire that case. There's 80% other costs that you should be really looking at to identify what that true ROI is, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So we hear the phrase vanity metrics a lot. Give me an idea on what vanity metrics would be, and those metrics that don't really help us figure out if there's a conversion happened.
Yeah, so I think it's a double-edged sword of vanity metrics, because vanity metrics are, I'll say this before I kind of describe what they are, is they're a needed tool to truly make decisions on the strategy of a marketing campaign. They are, they're needed.
Yeah.
But the problem is that vanity metrics are language that marketing people understand. Impressions, likes, yeah, bounce rate, time on site. Look, all that stuff is great and it matters for marketing people, but for CFOs and business owners sitting there looking at you, or board of directors, they have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah, it looks good, but my bank account's still the exact same. So how's this helping?
When we look at these vanity metrics, and we're measuring all these vanity metrics, what should we really be measuring, which is kind of like at the end of the funnel? Should we be measuring that conversion rate and then trying to figure out where that conversion came from? And measuring that instead of just measuring things like traffic?
No, I think the thing that you should be measuring is, you are correct, the end of the funnel. But I think the number one thing you have to measure is, you have to measure where you are on a predicated or set revenue goal, or say amount of products you want to sell. I prefer more of a revenue goal. Those are the metrics you should be basically looking at. And when you're looking at those metrics and more numbers, you know, the revenue numbers, are you hitting those revenue numbers? Then you have to go to the right-hand side. And you have to say to yourself, okay, all right, well, the next metric we should be looking at is, if we're not hitting our numbers, let's take a look at our sales funnel, our pipeline. I don't care what business you're in, even if it's a nonprofit to a profit, there's always a sales pipeline. There's always some sort of sales funnel. Yeah. So you need to basically be looking at those funnels and saying, okay, is the marketing efforts that we're running, are they addressing those funnel deficiencies? And that's where you drop down and potentially start looking at them, at the metrics. You asked a very interesting thing, which I think a lot of marketers get caught up on, and that is, should we be identifying the channels that are driving the conversions?
Yeah.
I believe pre-COVID, this might have been, maybe this might be a bit of a stretch, the line I'm going to say. But post-COVID, with everybody moving into a very digital world and having to be touched multiple times, you have to embrace conversions happen in an ecosystem. So conversions, you know, they may have seen you on Google, you know, just by doing, or they may have seen you on Facebook just by an awareness ad going through. And, you know, then maybe they came in and searched for you on Google, but ultimately maybe it was them seeing your one of your vans drive by that had your wrap and say, you know what, let me give them a call.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think too many people are focused on like ROAS and then they drill down the ROAS, you know, return on ad spend all the way down to the channel. That's a mistake. For e-commerce and for certain types of products, like emergency type products, like if a pipe broke in your house or you need a lawyer for something right away, then okay, I can say, okay, pay-per-click bought me in this lead and it cost XYZ. I'm with you on that. But for the other majority of businesses, the vast majority of businesses that aren't emergency, you can't judge return on investment by siloing out channels. It's an ecosystem.
Yeah, there's so many different touch points, aren't there? Very few conversions, particularly when you look at the business-to-business world, happen from somebody clicking on something, then going to a website, then buying something and having it delivered. It's like you said, they could see the truck drive past the house and just think, oh, give them a call now. How do we measure this? I mean, how do we kind of work out how much a conversion has cost?
Well, that's a great question. So you have to know your entire customer acquisition cost.
Yeah.
So you have to, so understanding your customer acquisition cost is everything that goes in it. Not only is it your ad spend, not only is it your, what you're paying your CMO or the agency, maybe what you're paying your sales team. It's also the CRM. It's the MarTech. Yeah. It's that truck wrap you had. It's maybe the networking group. It's the investment in sales coaching. All the way down, all of that has to be bundled up. And that's the biggest problem with companies is that they don't want to bundle all that up. They're like, well, that doesn't count. Or the best line we love hearing is, well, Jenny's more IT, but she does help out with our proposal layouts. Well, guess what? 20% of Jenny's salary is now going to customer acquisition costs because that is charging, that costs you money. So when you know all of that and then you divide it by the number of how many sales you have, out comes that actual customer acquisition cost. So if you do $200,000 in sales and you have 10 customers, you know, that cost you, you know, $20,000 to acquire a customer. Am I doing the math right on that? I don't know. But so then you know your cost. If you feel as if your cost is too high or the cost is not something for you to sustain your business or something's not right in that cost, that's when you have to go back and look at your customer acquisition costs and see, okay, am I too heavily weighted in, say, truck wraps? Am I too heavily weighted in digital marketing? Am I spending too much money on a sales team that's not really closing? That's when you make the decisions. And one of the major reasons we went down the road of return on investment is that when we got down to this level of the customer acquisition cost, we realized 9 out of 10 times companies were maybe allocating 10 to 15% of their budget to digital marketing and then making wholesale digital marketing decisions predicated on just that 15% investment. And for agency owners, that can get frustrating.
Yeah, sure. You mentioned something really interesting there about the fact of like the cost of software. I've seen many organizations where, say, I don't know, MailChimp or a marketing CRM or something is taken out of the IT budget. And that never touches sort of like, the cost of a sale or anything at all, ever.
No, that has to directly go into the marketing budget. That is not an IT number. You know, I'll take it a step further. I think I recently read on eMarketer, it's like upwards of 50% of CMOs said, yeah, they have like a MarTech stack and they don't even use 80% of it because they don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
So, you know, before you invest in a MarTech or build a MarTech stack, whatever it may be, and we're not advising you against it because you do need it. Yeah. You need to make sure that see how it fits within your customer acquisition cost. And, you know, what looks like a bunch of bells and whistles and looks great, you can't sign off on a MarTech solution that eats up 35% of your customer acquisition costs, because then you're going to have a MarTech solution that has no potential leads or customers to actually do anything with. So just kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah, sure. Is it also important to measure the value, the value over the lifetime of a client or a customer?
Well, it is, yeah, because I think that truly gives you your return on investment. So one of the things that we look at is the lifetime value ratio. You know, which is basically for every dollar I put into acquiring this customer, how much money will I get back over the lifetime value? The lifetime value could be maybe they're a one-off buyer. You know, maybe it's, you know, whatever. There's one time, you know, they can only use you one time and that's it. Well, then that's a lifetime value ratio. It's one sale, it's $1,000 and that's it. But, you know, then if you're going and if you're looking at maybe you are, you know, you're in some sort of consulting business and they're going to put you on a retainer for like $1,000, and that retainer historically lasts 2 years. Well, then you have to kind of start tracking that $24,000 and then saying, how much am I willing to invest to get that $24,000, you know, back to me? And that's where you kind of moved into the lifetime value ratio. And like I said earlier, historically 3 to 1.
Yeah.
Is the baseline that you want to go with. But depending upon your operating margins and what your business is, you may need to operate at a 5, 6, 7 to 1. But it's critical that businesses understand the lifetime value ratio and understand the lifetime value of their customer. Because, you know, one of the ways we arrived at this and one of the ways in which we're trying to teach customers to look at it this way is this is exactly how Silicon Valley was built. This is exactly how venture capitalists came in and started investing in companies like Google and the rest of them is they look at the lifetime value ratio and they look if they can scale your business. And if you're sitting at a 1 to 1, 2 to 1, it might be because you're trying to, you know, gather users or gather whatever it may be. But if you're consistently there and you're selling a product and things aren't working well, that's where venture capitalists look and say they're not profitable. You get to the 3 to 4 to 1, now you look like a business.
Yeah. Yeah. I had somebody explain it to me in a really simple way once. And they said that like that they were dealing with a beauty salon, right? And a Facebook acquisition, a conversion would cost £20. And the value of the product was £7. And they were saying, well, we're spending £20 to get seven. This is ridiculous. But what they didn't realize that you get your brows done for £7, but then you come back every 6 weeks and get it done.
Absolutely.
Year after year after year after year. So that £20 is actually well worth spending, isn't it?
Well, 100% is. And that's where you have to start tracking. The thing you'd look at your lifetime value ratio is that at what stage do I get my investment back? So if they were charging £20 or they invested £20 and they were charging £7 for the eyebrow wax, like you said. So you then you have to look at, okay, when historically will they come back for a haircut or maybe they'll come back in for a mani-pedi and then say, okay, well, it's going to take me 7 months to get the £20 back. But by month 12, I'm already at, say, £50 by how much they've already spent.
Yeah.
So it is knowing that time to overcome your investment is a critical metric as well.
Yeah. Have you got any ideas and help for reporting to the board? Because this is, again, one thing which I hear an awful lot of is that the board don't really understand the marketing tech, as you mentioned earlier. They don't understand bounce rates and all these sort of marketing things. They just want to see a graph that points up at the end of the day. Yeah. So you see targets being hit and goals being hit. But some numbers might actually go down, which could be a positive thing, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of metrics that, you know, if you want to dive into the marketing metrics that, you know, if you're, you know, maybe you may have less visitors on your website, but they're spending more time on your website.
Yeah.
You know, you may have less conversions coming through, but the conversions coming through because of the way you've tweaked the content, they're now legitimate conversions and they're actually ready to buy. But I think the, you know, it, reporting to the board, I think that goes back to the collective argument that, again, the digital marketing world has pushed vanity metrics. So most of the people sitting on the board are normally C-suite or a decision maker of some sort. So they themselves are used to seeing ranking reports and traffic reports and so forth. It's almost like you have to really have a one-on-one with the chairman and talk to them and say, you know, and ask that individual, what is the goal of this company from a financial standpoint? I need to know financially what it is. If you want to break it up in departments, break it up in service lines, but the board clearly knows what the financial goals are of the company. Because what we're going to do before we get into all the beautiful finger painting of charts going up and charts going down and all that great stuff is we're going to say if your goal was 10 million pounds right here, on the right-hand side, we're at 7 million pounds, and this is exactly how we got here from sales and marketing. We're going to establish that metric first, and then we'll look at that. And it's funny, every single time, John, that we start off with that conversation, immediately the conversation of rankings, impressions, and all that, they don't even want to have that conversation anymore. Yeah. Now they're just looking at, what are the pipeline deficiencies? Why are we having a problem getting to $1 million? And they realize 9 out of 10 times, your marketing team is probably doing a pretty good job. Your creative is probably pretty kick-ass. You know, maybe your product, you need to differentiate a little bit. We can talk about that another time. But they realize that a lot of times it's their internal funnel strategy, their internal sales process, or maybe the internal problems are hindering those companies from getting to where they need to be.
Yeah, sure. I do hear quite a bit of pushback. I mean, one example was somebody I worked with some time ago. They had, I think it was 35,000 folk on their mailing list, their MailChimp account. And mm-hmm. and we ran some filters on that, and something like 22,000 of those people had never ever opened any email for like over a year ever, and they weren't going to open next week's email or the week after or something, and it was holding open rates back, it was holding clicks back, and all these numbers and things. So we kind of like said, we need to get rid of these people, we need to delete them. But then the board said no, because the number will go down. And it just seems a little bit daft to me that we worry an awful lot about numbers that might go down, but it's not going to bear any resemblance to meeting targets or revenue or anything.
No, you're, and that's the problem. There's so many people who are tied in to looking at those type of metrics, and it's almost you get to the point where frustration sets in as an agency owner, yeah. And it's like, let us do our job. Yeah. Okay, all these numbers and all that. You know, if we can get you to focus on the dollars and cents, okay, and the pipeline. And you let us do this on the right-hand side, you know, don't worry about the numbers. And I think if your team is showing up consistently to the board and they are seeing, you know, the profit is going where it needs to be, or, you know, the revenue is going where it needs to be, the profit's at the level it needs to be, and that, you know, they clearly understand the marketing investment, like they clearly understand where the marketing investment is going, how it's being allocated, why it's being allocated, then that's the conversation that you would like to have, and not that metric conversation where they, like you said, they get worried about an email list being reduced or so forth. And it's, the problem is that the average business owner, even on a board of directors right now, they don't know how to measure an ROI in marketing. Sure. And the only thing they know is vanity metrics, like how many email subscribers we have.
Yeah. How do we technically do this? Because the world of marketing, particularly within the technology side and particularly digital marketing, is so fragmented. Incredibly fragmented. I mean, you could be doing something on Twitter, you could be doing something on Facebook, there's Instagram and LinkedIn, and then we've got digital advertising, we've got Google Ads, it's everywhere, isn't it? And then when you start building in things like the van driving past the door, how do we actually technically track all this and see it in one place? Do we use lots of tracking URLs?
No, I think you have to lay everything out on a buyer's journey grid.
Right.
So you have to basically, we say the five stages: awareness, consideration, purchase, retention, advocacy. You have to lay that out. If you want to go old school, like we all do in marketing, the old school, just break out the Excel doc and lay it out. And you literally have to say, okay, in the awareness stage, this is what we're doing in the awareness stage. Consider all the way down. You know, then obviously you can go in about how you want to gather, you know, how much money you're spending and how you're allocating all that. We can help you with that, but that's, you know, off to the side. But then you have a clear picture in front of you of the buyer's journey. And you're understanding everything you're doing. And even like the van driving, you know, right there, that technically would be awareness. Google AdWords, that lives in the consideration and the purchase stage. We're going to make sure we have Google AdWords in there. And you lay all this stuff out and you ask yourself, all right, I have all this stuff laid out. I feel really good about it. Okay. You know, I feel like everything's there. Now, am I addressing all funnel deficiencies? Am I making sure that I'm working, like, you know, let's just say we don't have a problem with leads, but man, we're having a tough time converting. Well, then you need to look at the buyer's journey and say, probably going to need to allocate some of my money over to the purchase stage. So what can I do in the purchase stage? Maybe kind of focus on, you know, what platforms I should bring on. And without me getting too in depth, I think the answer I'm trying to give you is that the wild, wild west is over. I don't think you have to look at all the millions of different platforms. They're there, but using platforms is almost like tools in the toolbox. That's kind of like the worst term, but it's true.
Yeah.
And say, okay, and only focus on the five stages of the buyer's journey. When you focus on those five stages, then you know which platform to bring out. Then you know which strategy to bring out. And the only way you make decisions on those buyer's journey is specifically to get your sales pipeline moving to the point of what your ultimate revenue goal is. And that's how I think you can organize the chaos of marketing being all over the place. And I kind of veered away from your question of, you know, tracking URLs and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, we can't get into that. But if that makes sense, I think that's the step before you start looking at the tracking.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it seems as if the the people who are trying to sell you the services, the apps and the tools and everything, are going down the route of all the tracking and trying to bring everything together all the time. This is what I can't... I mean, I've been hearing this since the year 2000, that all the apps and all the software and all the tools will be brought together in one place. And we're 2021 and we're nowhere near it yet, are we? Do you think we should stop worrying too much about that?
Well, I mean, I think we should stop worrying about that. Yeah. I think because business models are 100% built on marketers not truly understanding what all of their traffic is doing. Sure. And if there is no way Google and Facebook are going to be giving you all accurate data of all times, I think we all agree that's not happening. Yeah. Yeah. And there's no way those two are going to be sharing any data. So any dashboard is going to be able to integrate all the data and say, hey, here's a complete customer mapping profile. Well, you're discounting the thought process that Google and Facebook wake up every single morning and they're pretty much banking on 20% of the ad spend that's going to be spent, 25% of the ad spend, and I'm really low on that, that's going to be spent every day on their platforms is going to be by people trying to figure out the problem, trying to figure out the audience. So if your business model is predicated, which is publicly traded companies, by the way, predicated on maybe 25% being on the low end of people screwing up, what you know incentive they have for somebody to create a platform and say, hey, we're going to put this all in one spot for you, because it's those numbers are kind of fake.
Yeah, I'd love to know how much money was actually wasted on Facebook and Google.
Oh, they'll never tell you that. But I think you know as a marketer how much that is. Think about it. You're like, now that you, it's almost like now that you've seen it, you can't unsee it. You're like, damn, you're right. I guess they are making money on that. Yeah,
it'd be scary, wouldn't it? It would be really scary.
Yeah.
So let's move quickly back to tracking URLs and things and the technology side of it. Do you think they do still play a part, all the UTM codes and everything, and trying to track where everything's come from?
Yeah, I think that play. I don't want to call that vanity metric because I think it's right, and I do think when you're tracking, you know, certain events, like, you know, maybe you're running a special or a sale, or you know, and you have a landing page and there's a white paper download, and that lead goes to your salesperson, or maybe they even go in and purchase a product. Yeah, I do think you should be tracking that stuff. And I do think you should try to, you know, build your own, you know, consumer profile and putting the data together and saying, hey, look, I know they went to Google and, you know, looks like the same individual and they were, you know, retargeted on Facebook. And then I know that there are some platforms that will help build that audience to a point. And I think you should lean on some of those platforms. I think it is a good investment to identify the people coming back in. So I think not focusing on analytics or not focusing on the data and what's coming back, you can't do that. But I think at the end of the day, you have to stop siloing the data and say, okay, well, Instagram did this for us and YouTube did this for us. You can silo it initially to digest that data initially. But then as you start going up the chain, that's when you have to start, you know, kind of trying to pull it all together and looking at it from a holistic standpoint. I know the term holistic is so bad in marketing, but it is kind of the way you have to look at it.
I mean, you mentioned analytics, and I'm going to jump in straight away with Google Analytics and Tag Manager and that. I mean, well, whenever anybody opens that software, a little bit of their soul just disappears, doesn't it? It's not easy stuff to digest. You really do need to hire someone who knows what they're doing, don't you? Do you think, are there any better tools than those on the market for measuring?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got tools out there. I mean, I kind of kick the tires around on Orbi a little bit, which isn't bad. That kind of simplifies the process. I think HubSpot, you know, can kind of help out some teams. I think HubSpot has some things you should be looking at, you know, but at the end of the day, the majority of, I mean, look, you can always go all the way up to, like, you know, there's obviously platforms that run, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yes, there are platforms that the major players are using, but I think our audience we're talking about is not one of the major, you know, Fortune, you know, 1,000 companies.
Yeah, sure.
I think at the end of the day, yes, you can simplify it with a platform like HubSpot, which I think will kind of show you user engagement and show you a lot of different things. But I think the reality of it is that you are going to have to rely on something like Google Analytics. You're going to, if you are engaged in a marketing campaign, if you are engaged in investing, you know, or you are engaged in a marketing campaign because you're cutting the checks for it or just running it, there's no way around it. You need to get certified in Google. You need to understand the metrics. Even if what Google's kicking back to you is maybe 70% accurate, I would say it's probably the most accurate indicator of web traffic out there.
Yeah. Do you think we should stop really doing it ourselves and hire some specialized folk who really know what they're doing with data analytics nowadays?
Yes. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why we're around. I think the, and I don't mean to knock this on people, I'm saying, but when I walk in and I have a conversation, now we're coming from 20 years, you know, experience digital marketing and, you know, and 20 years of marketing and financial reporting. So we're a bit of a unique hybrid walking in, but it's fascinated me when I sit down and look and talk to people, the lack of knowledge they know on data, on tracking, and the guessing that goes on in major companies that, you know, pre-COVID and, you know, even before that, yeah, you could guess and get away with it, you know, because I still think before COVID, people are like, yeah, I'm all in on digital. They would tell you that they run up to the lake and only just put their foot in, you know, and now I think people are just doing cannonballs off the cliffs to get into digital marketing. And if you don't know the data and you don't know how to interpret the data and make decisions on the data, and if you don't have that experience, you're going to find yourself in a world of trouble burning through ad dollars. And yes, John, I couldn't agree anymore. You should be bringing in experts to help you out with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think there's a big difference in marketing. I've noticed it particularly over the last 5 or 6 years, where the content creator, the copywriter is a completely different person now to the person who needs to deal with Google Analytics and Tag Manager. Totally different person.
You shouldn't even bring in the content person at all in a meeting.
Yeah.
You can maybe discuss what the ideas are, but reporting metrics, that content individual, she has or he has, they're not part of that conversation. And you know what? It's not fair to bring them in on the conversation because that's not their job.
Yeah. 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 Len, I could talk for hours on this because I hate Google Analytics and numbers. I'm much more into my content. So we're going.
It's a big divide. I get it.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. And I think the whole industry is so new as well, isn't it? And if you think the internet really started going in what, 96, 97, that sort of time. So in the world as a whole, the industry is very, very new, isn't it? And still learning.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, when I got involved in this back in 2004, where I was, okay, I'm legit going to do search engine optimization and so forth. This was after I was, you know, doing banking and stuff like that. It was easy for me to get clients. It was a layup. It was so easy to hustle and get clients. I could put an ad on Craigslist. I could put an ad in a local paper back in 2004, and I would get 25 calls in. I had no competition. Now, you know, if you're a freelancer, if you're a small agency trying to get out there, you know, now you're seeing this baby. It's not a fully matured market. It's a baby. Yeah. And you're just seeing the amount of people running in right now. And yeah, it's new. Meaning I think where we are now, it's new because social media and all that didn't exist back then when I was doing SEO. It's pretty much Google. Yeah. Yeah. So you're right. It's new. There's a lot of people getting involved. It's exciting. It's exciting, but it's definitely, it's a competitive marketplace because a lot of people like to do it.
Yeah, I think we forget how new it is sometimes, don't we? Because I think, what was it, the iPhone came out in 2007, 2008, I think. So that's not a long time ago. That's just over a decade. That's not a long time ago.
No, I think one of the biggest stats I tell people is that one of the largest just to show you how new the internet is and internet marketing all it is. And yes, it's been around for 20 years. I get that. I know a lot of the old school SEO guys and girls love to see that. I get that. But in its current iteration, this is brand new.
Yeah.
Because this doesn't look anything like it did 15 years ago. Sure. Now we're in a vastly big universe. But the thing I say all the time is some of the largest advertisers in the world away from consumer products is the pharmaceutical industry. They're a monster advertiser. They only have 12% of their budget allocated right now to digital marketing. Now, I know that that's going to change a little bit, but that industry only has 12% of their budget in the digital marketing. So that should show you the infancy of where we are. Now, that's because they're caught up in, you know, longer term TV contracts and they have to try to get out of it. There's regulations they got to get through. I get that. But when you know you're going to make more money and you know your eyes are on the internet, you know that if you're the third largest advertiser in the world, that industry, that you should be at least at 75, 80% marketing should be online. So that should show you the infancy of where we are right now and how many of those industries, they're not even remotely 50% invested in the digital marketing. So that's a good ray of hope for people.
Yeah, exciting times, far more to happen in the future, I think. Len, thanks ever so much for your time. Where can we find you? Where's your website and your social media bits?
You can find me pretty much at Comexis.com. That's right there where we can kind of help you out with really identifying your return on investment. And if you are an agency, by all means, we work with a ton of agencies. Our agency is actually morphing over to more of a data and ROI platform. You can do that. You can find me on Twitter at LenWardNJ, and you can find me on LinkedIn at LenWard, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Brilliant. I'll leave some links in the show notes as well. Len, thanks ever so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Take care.
Thanks again to Len for his time. Now, if you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe for more on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast player, Stitcher, Amazon, Google. It's everywhere. It is. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.